This week on Straight Talk Africa, what is the state of Africa's healthcare? Do citizens have access to quality healthcare that is dependable and affordable?
To me, it's not affordable.
There is no supply of medicines.
For healthcare to be made better is to fight corruption.
The World Health Organization report revealed that governments in Africa are not prioritizing spending on healthcare. What will it take for African governments to invest more in healthcare? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCorry. The healthcare sector in a lot of countries in the African continent is not serving the needs of the patients or the needs of its medical personnel. 20 years after the Abuja Declaration, where the African Union committed to allocating 15% of its budget to health, this financial responsibility is not being achieved. Some countries are doing better than others, but in countries like Nigeria or Kenya, accessibility to healthcare can be problematic and comes at a high price. Let's see what Nigerians and Kenyans are saying about this.
Healthcare is not accessible in Nigeria. Local medical practitioners are not encouraged. However, it still bounces back to bad system of government because our universities are not improved, they don't sponsor research, and there is political undue interference in trying to handle the medical care.
There is a lot of congestion in the hospitals. There is no supply of medicines. There is a lot of corruption in between the supply and the people who are receiving the medicines.
As it is in Nigeria, healthcare sector has failed totally. In the Federal Capital Territory here, they are trying. But in our countryside, it has not reached.
I'll give you my story. I left the hospital without receiving treatment because they kept sending me from one place to another. Also, the system was down and didn't reply to messages. In the end, you get angry and you leave.
To me, it's not affordable because things now are very, very expensive.
I think the quality is low because most of the doctors are demoralized and they are concentrated on their medical clinics, not really on the public clinics. Yeah, because most of the time they are going on strikes, they are not paid well.
For healthcare to be made better is to fight corruption because it has entered every sphere of life. In the Nigeria. If you don't know anybody in the hospital, you are gone.
You need to know somebody to know somebody to get a proper health care. Sometimes. Most times your situation or your problems get referred to another hospital that is capable of taking care of it. And when you come, you are not treated as a citizen. There's a classism treatment in the healthcare system.
Well, the challenges of improving healthcare accessibility and coverage vary from country to country. But are there some common guidelines that can be observed? For more insight, I turn to my guests. From Nairobi, Kenya, I'm joined by Dr. Catherine Chobutunji. She is the Executive Director of the African Population and Health Research Center. And from Phoenix, Arizona, in the U.S., I'm joined by W. Jude Moore, a non-resident fellow at the Center for Global Development and former Minister of Public Works of Liberia. It's a pleasure to have both of you on Straight Talk Africa. Now, I want to. I hope you listen to what the people we interviewed said just before I came to you. If I may start with you, Dr. Chobutunji, what do you make of their sentiments? Those are people speaking in the capitals of Nigeria and Kenya.
I think I'll speak to the person speaking from Kenya because there's been a lot of turmoil, if I could call it that, in the health sector. And so the sentiments are not really far from what has been going on. And I'll just give an example. The person said that the places are crowded and the doctors are not there, and the doctors are demoralized. And I'll just say that in the recent past, there's been quite a lot of changes in the health sector specific around healthcare financing, where the government overhauled what existed as a national hospital insurance fund that was paying for, you know, medical care, and they replaced it overnight with a new system that has been plagued by all sorts of problems, technical problems, people paying for care and then they can't get it, and then providers throwing in the towel and saying, we are not providing care anymore because the system is just not working. So there's a lot going on. But before that, the Minister of Health and government reduced the salaries of intern doctors from something close to about $2,000 per month to something about maybe $600 per month. And they gave, they said they just don't have money to pay intern doctors.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be surprised to find that doctors are demoralized because intern doctors play a critical role in the health sector. So I would relate with what the person from Kenya is saying.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Your thoughts also, your observations, Mr. Moore, Judy?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thanks again for having me. I think that the sentiments expressed both in Kenya and Nigeria are pretty symptomatic about the health sector across the continent. In a lot of places, there isn't enough investment going to the health sector affecting salaries. There are health facilities without medicines. And so credible accounts we're hearing, and those are very reflective of the sector. But I think those could be used to describe most of the sectors across the continent because financing for public goods, health, education, infrastructure, significantly under pressure. And so these are the outcomes you see when public finances are under such stress.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we mentioned earlier also that there was a commitment, the so-called Abuja agreement for African countries to at least, allocate up to 15%, just 15% of health financing from about 4%. And since then, it's been some time, only perhaps seven countries have achieved that goal. And yet we know that Africa as a continent carries the burden of disease more than any other part of the world. Up to 24% of the burden of is in sub-Saharan Africa, yet financing is up to maybe what? In some countries, 1%. So why, in your observations, has that not happened? Why has that not been prioritized?
Well,
Dr.
First.
Catherine Chobotunji,
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me go to you first.
Yes, I mean, I think there are different reasons. Of some of them are political, the kind of political system that exists, the kinds of governance system, the levels of accountability in the system, how accountable governments are to their citizens. I think it revolves around that. And then, of course, the other issues like corruption and all that. And you just have to watch a budgeting process for a country and see where the priorities are. And then after that, see what happens even in the course of implementing the budgets that have been approved by Parliament for you to get a sense of really how unaccountable our governments are. A lot of money spent on things that don't really help the ordinary person, whether it's health, whether it's education, whether it's infrastructure. So part of it, I think, is in the political dispensation that exists in these countries, that there's not too much accountability and therefore governments pretty much get away with anything. And so if you look at the expenditures for defense, expenditures in a country like Kenya or Uganda for State House, you know, some of these expenditures are larger than the budget for the health sector. And it happens and parliaments approve it. So I think part of it, I don't think it's a lack of money necessarily. I think it's a lack of prioritization and putting things that matter to the ordinary person as a priority.
And indeed, Judy, as Dr. Chobotunji mentions there, it's not a lack of money. We know that everything is all about leadership, but health is investing in the health sector is actually an investment for the country in so many ways, right, especially when we've seen what things like the pandemics have done, the havoc they wreaked on the continent. What is it that makes it so hard for the African leadership to realize, and you've been in government, that it's important to prioritize health more than anything else?
Again, I will speak from a perspective, having been a deputy chief of staff to the president when we encountered the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. I think there are a number of reasons why. First, I want to go back a little bit and say it is about money. About 80% of all the countries on the continent depend on some sort of commodity export for more than 60% of their revenue. So in Zambia, it's copper. In Nigeria, it's oil. And those commodities, there's such fluctuations in them. And so because of that, there's not enough money. The second thing is we are the continent with experiencing the highest growth in our population. So our population is really young and growing. And so no matter how much money is allocated, our spending has not kept pace with the growth of our population. That's the second reason. And so over time, I think African governments have gotten pretty dependent on external actors to finance significant portions of the health. You see what's happening with the continent's health systems now with the cessation of USAID financing. So it's a combination of this, that significant pressures on government financing and then dependence on external actors to help finance the health.
Yeah, which is sad, and that's what we're seeing now, people scrambling all over, wondering what to do with the U.S. Finance freezes. But the question is, what about, and I want to stick with you, Judy, about the lack of finances, but then we see a lot of spending by government officials in their countries, like in Kenya, where we've seen protests because of the obscene spending by public officials on luxuries, on travels, and sometimes even just showing off the kind of things they buy with the money they make from being public officials. I mean, is that not a statement that there is money if we had discipline, fiscal discipline, and some morality around the whole issue?
There is no question of that. There's certain obscene, conspicuous consumption from public officials, especially in countries where you have significant underinvestment in the health sector and the education sector. I think this is true. I also think the doctor's point earlier about the lack of accountability through the budgeting process, I think those things are also contributors to that. But I don't want to place the bulk of the underinvestment we're seeing on that. There is corruption, there's fraud, there's waste in the system. The money is allocated could be more efficiently used. But I would agree that sometimes when it comes to priority setting, that because the people most affected by this are some of the poorest people and have very little voice in society, their priorities are not reflected in the budget or its implementation. And sometimes that is also a significant contributor to the lack of investment in the health sector across the continent. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Chibutunji, could it be that, for the officialdom, it doesn't touch them much because they don't have to suffer the same effects of lack of proper health care because they can travel elsewhere. Most of them can go abroad for treatment and, take care of themselves and their families. Is that perhaps the reason why they sometimes appear to be colors when it comes to spending on health care?
I think that could be part of it, because if you've not experienced this kind of pain, you don't know what it means to be, an ordinary Kenyan or an ordinary African on the street, not knowing when you're sick what's going to happen to you and relying on donations from friends and colleagues and the church and all that. So that could be it, because our politicians probably are out of touch. They don't experience potholes, they're in big cars, they fly to, the rural areas and all this. That could be part of that. And I don't disagree that money is an issue. But I think it's a combination of money and prioritization, because, as you rightly said, the government expenditure over the last 20 years in all African countries has increased, but it's the proportion of health has decreased. So, again, as I've said, if you look at the patronage in the political system, if you look at some of the things that you've talked about, the expenses for renovating state house and buying furniture and buying new curtains, that is always available, but not money to pay healthcare workers, not money to put into the system, not money to buy drugs, not money for vaccines. So, yes, there's a problem of money, but there's also a huge problem of prioritization. And as you said, it's because our political class is not always affected by the problems they create, by the choices they make for us.
Sure, and does not feel accountable to the people. It's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the need for African governments to invest more in healthcare services. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Breathtaking landscape, diverse wildlife, ancient history, and spectacular safaris, a journey to Africa is an exciting and enriching experience. And while often not recognized, women play a significant role in shaping and driving Africa's tourism industry. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will explore women's role in Africa's tourism industry and what should be done to give them equal opportunities, access to resources, and ownership. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Welcome back. You're with Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. We are discussing the challenges of improving healthcare accessibly and affordability in many African countries. My guest, Dr. Catherine Chobotunji, Executive Director of the African Population and Health Research Center in Nairobi, Kenya. And in Phoenix, Arizona, W. Judith Moore, a non-resident fellow at the Center for Global Development and former Minister of Public Works of Liberia. Now, it has been said in one report, it was saying it is not acceptable that some members of society should face death, disability, ill health, or impoverishment for reasons that could be addressed at limited cost. And that's exactly what's happening, that in many African communities, people are actually dying, people are becoming poor because they're spending even up to half of their incomes to pay out of pocket for health, if it's available. Let me first come to you, W. Judy. In terms of reliance on international donors, which we've seen as something that Africa has done over a long time, is there a plan? Is there a plan to ever win our countries out of, from dependence on external funding, especially for critical sectors like health?
Again, in many countries, I doubt there is such a plan. I think there is an aspiration, but I don't think there's an actionable plan to win African governments off this. And this is one of the things that I hope that the decision of help from USAID maybe will force African governments to actually begin to reconsider financing public goods themselves, especially when it comes to health. And one of the examples that I always give in terms of how we can do this, when I was in government, almost every year we buy new vehicles for members of the cabinet, for ministries and agencies, for members of parliament. And sometimes those aren't needed. There's no need to buy cars year in, year out. So there are places in the budget where we can make cuts so that we can be able to finance our health sector. We can pay doctors. We can pay, provide medicines. And to Dr. Catherine's point, maybe this is about prioritization. And now that we no longer can depend on external donors and helpers, maybe there will be a change in how African governments budget. That is my hope at least.
Yes, and for sure, it's something that is so In a way, for those of us who observe, you feel even a sense of humiliation just to see how the people have to grovel in poverty when those in public service are actually groveling in extreme wealth. Dr. Chebutunji, in a report that you wrote, that was on BBC, in Uganda, where about 1.4 million people are living with HIV/AIDS, 60% of spending on its HIV/AIDS program was from PEPFAR, and about 20% from the Global Fund, and again, partly from PEPFAR. My question is, as a continent, where's that dignity, when it comes to taking care of your own people, when we have to always rely on somebody else out there for years, for decades, and when they stop sending that money, then suddenly we are all confused and we are concerned about the maybe even more deaths of our people. Dr. Chebutunji.
I think where is the dignity is a good question. And I think for me, COVID was an eye-opener. The COVID-19 pandemic was an eye-opener of a world that, behaved in a certain way, and our African political leaders still had some expectations about perhaps a world that existed maybe 10 years ago, or maybe never existed, and we always assumed that that kind of world existed, where we live in a world that we think somebody else elsewhere owes us a living. And so our political class is in that mindset that, we are poor and we are like this, and it's the responsibility of the world to take care of us and take care of our people. And somehow I think, much as this has been very disruptive and very distressing, to be honest, COVID-19 was not a wake-up call. This could be a wake-up call that we are going to see how our governments are going to say, yeah, we are so poor, we can't afford to take care of our people, and then budget in ways that are not taking care of our people, while, continuing with the lavish spending on all sorts of things. So let's wait and see how this happens. And coincidentally, a lot of countries are doing their budgets for 2025, 2026, and some of these statements are already out. And there are signs already that actually, I know for a fact that the Ugandan government has increased expenditure in health, and I know the Kenyan government has increased expenditure in health. They've not said this is a response to the USAID cuts and all that, but perhaps that's a response. And ultimately, I think the USAID, development aid system was very, very inefficient. And so with less money, if the government's able to cough it up, I don't think they need to cough up everything that the USAID was putting on the table. They may need to cough up less, and if they're more efficient, we might actually get the same results. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a hypothesis. We wait to see how that will be borne out. But there's been some kind of dependency that has gone on for too long, and our governments have become comfortable and outsourced their problems to others. And so now that some of these others have withdrawn their support, let's wait and see how they respond. Yeah. But I don't think we are not... I think we're going to see higher investments in health as a result of this vision.
Yeah, we hope... I mean, one hopes that just that feeling of indignity, the indignity of forever being a beggar, dependent on somebody else, might spur the African leaders to do something. The people we spoke to were actually, earlier on, were in Abuja, the capital of Nigeria, and the others in Nairobi, Kenya, and yet they are saying they have a hard time accessing health care, and they cannot afford it. There are all sorts of problems. But now think about the millions who live in far-flung areas, the rural areas of our continent. What is the state of affairs there, and what can we expect, especially now with this reduced funding, which means that some of the programs that were supported by NGOs cannot be sustained?
Yeah, in most African countries, the further you get from the capital, the less and less footprint of the state you see. And in those far-off places, we call them the last-mile health areas, it was largely NGOs and foreign government programs that sustain health in those places. With the cutting off of those, I think there's going to be a very disruptive and destructive period of adjustment, even before governments can make up for what is lost. But to Dr. Catherine's point, African governments for too long have imagined themselves living in a world that no longer exists. We have seen significant declines in ODA. Partners in Europe and elsewhere channeling money to Ukraine and Gaza away from Africa. And yet African governments continue to budget, are continuing to address public health, continue to address education and investment in public goods in the same way. So beyond the inaccessibility issue is when you do access those facilities, sometimes the doctor shows up and there's no medicine, there's no equipment. Our health systems in terms of value chain, there's very little manufacturing of drugs being done on the continent. We have to depend on the global fund to finance our drug programs. And so dependent is the health sector on external actors that regardless of what adjustments we make, it will come at great cost to African people. And then finally, to your point, one hopes that at some point there's a certain indignation of being the perpetual ward of the international system. There's a certain amount of shame, a certain amount of pride that emerges. Because on the one hand, we want people to take us seriously and treat us as equals. But on the other hand, we have to depend on them for some of the most basic things. That's inconsistent. It doesn't make sense. And my hope is this is the beginning of some sort of a consciousness in African leadership about how they see themselves and how they see their people.
Exactly. Now, Dr. Chibutunji, we've talked about, you know, there is a lack of, investment in the health sector, but also doctors and other medical personnel are not paid well. Some of them have to leave the country, and so we have shortages. And we know that investing in the health of people, in fact, is one of the best investments any country can make. Should this issue be treated like an emergency, just like we are responding to a pandemic or sort of, a major natural disaster? Dr. Chobot.
There was a report that came out, I think it was in 2015, that talks about the social determinants of health. And I think it made a very compelling case. It was probably earlier than that. It made a very compelling case of why investing in health is a good idea. And of course, the report came out. We learn about it in schools of public health. But when it comes to what governments actually did, I don't think much changed from that. And so you always hope that, again, as I've said, COVID did not wake up our African leaders. If this does not wake them up, then I don't know what will. Because perhaps you need a shock to the system for them to sit up and say, it would actually be a good idea to invest in health. Because there are many, many, many benefits, not just in the education sector, but also in the economic, a lot of economic activities depend on good health of the population. But still, we have governments who think about development in a different way. Mm-hmm. Development is highways, it's airports, it's, shiny skyscrapers, and not development as healthy people. Mm-hmm. And I think we need this kind of paradigm shift where people look at development differently, where we define what development means for us.
Exactly.
We could say, we are going to make sure our people are healthy, and that's our goal. Not that we increase our GDP, I don't know by how many percentage, or that we increase the road network by what percentage. Because if you start from health, actually all those things could come, that you need roads for people to be healthy. But if you start from roads, then health is secondary. Yeah.
Well, time. We hope someday somebody will have the heart to feel for the people of Africa. We have to leave it right here. Dr. Catherine Chibutunji and W. Jude Moore, thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.